Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, August 13th, 2014. And with me today, I have two brains among brains, because, because you are. Kelly Gumont, how are you, Kelly?
I'm well. How are you, Jeff?
I'm doing good. It's great to have you here. And also, John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I'm good. I got my walk in this morning. Feeling great.
Awesome. And last night you spoke at the Mac and Tech user group.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I'm so glad I got to come and see you speak. That was really cool. So where I'm going with that is keep your ear to the ground, people, because we do come out and speak at user group meetings. So see if we're coming in to speak where you are. And if you want to have us talk at your user groups, let us know, because we can probably work something out. So, So,
and it doesn't matter if you are where we are. I've done a number of presentations via Skype.
Yes. So, and it works surprisingly well.
Yeah, I've done Skype and FaceTime both. So don't let the fact that your user group is not in Portland or in Colorado be the thing that says, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't bother, because we would be more than happy to come talk to you.
Yes, even if it's not physically, we can virtually be there.
Exactly.
And it's always fun to talk with user groups, because you guys rock. Now, I have a couple topics that I have no doubt will be of interest to you guys today. And the first one I know you're interested in, because this is something we started talking about in the meeting this morning. And this is the whole thing with where the technology has gone from what we were promised.
Mm-hmm.
And John, you were talking about how we've had all these promises about where we would be now, and sometimes we're there, but sometimes we're not.
Yeah, well, the way we're there is how we got around to the iPhone. Yesterday, I wrote an article about the iPhone versus tricorder, seeing the future with blurred vision, and there's a fabulous shopping page with Star Trek products run by young Mr. Roddenberry, Gene's son, who has a replica tricorder for sale. And I started looking at this tricorder image and recalling the days of Star Trek, the original series, and how fascinated we were with the communicators, you know, Kirk here and Spock's tricorder. And I started thinking about how the technology actually evolved. We didn't get a 23rd century tricorder. We got a 21st century iPhone, and things didn't go exactly as we expected. And I was always thinking about that. I was thinking about how things in the 60s were based on the idea of mechanics, you know, physical things. Guns and bombs and typewriters and physical machines and radios and all sorts of other physical gadgets, James Bond exploding pens. You know, they do things by virtue of their physical mechanisms. And what we didn't see coming, we saw computers coming and we saw the general trend and the technology advancement, but what we didn't see was that everything would be based on the moving of electrons instead of the moving of bits and pieces. And then I went into some other things, like advanced manufacturing processes that give us something like the iPhone. Many, many layers of software abstraction. I think people expected computers to be faster, but they didn't see how we would move into multiple layers of abstraction. Things like Java and object-oriented programming that gave us tremendous leverage. So you have software objects talking through APIs to hardware. Miniaturized hardware, and that I don't think people saw coming. So in that sense, you know, we got something even better than a tricorder. But if you're ready, in a minute I want to rant about artificial intelligence. That's what we I don't think we got what we wanted there. No. By any means.
No, at least we haven't yet. And I hadn't really thought about the whole thing with in the 1960s, we were looking at the advancement of technology as a mechanical thing, instead of looking at it as electricity moving. And
yeah,
that's made a big difference in the way devices look compared to what was envisioned at the time. And we always go back to the tricorder because that was the be-all, end-all device in Star Trek. And it worked out really well because if they needed a device that would easily let them move the plot forward, you just put that feature into the tricorder for that episode. Mm-hmm. And in a manner of speaking, we're doing that now with our iPhones. We just go to the App Store and get whatever that app is. And I see so many people looking at the tricorder as the analog for the iPhone. I think it's really the marriage of a tricorder and the comm lock from Space 1999.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, yeah. When you look at that old tricorder, you see it as looking at the future through current eyes, you know, extrapolation. And one of the things I mentioned in the article is that, you know, looking at the future through extrapolation is kind of dangerous. In fact, what you have to do is you have to trust in a vision that seems really wacky, that looks, you know, really crazy. It's an abrupt quantum leap, and then trust that, you know, humans will engineer their way through it. But simple extrapolation hardly ever works for looking at the future.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Now, Kelly, you ranted for a minute about a promise we were made for robots.
Well, really, I mean, my problem is that, you know, I grew up on the Jetsons, and I don't have Rosie. All I have is a Roomba. And that's like the closest I can get to something that goes around my house.
It's an article you should write.
On my behalf.
I expected Rosie and I got Roomba. Great headline.
And the thing is, like, some of the stuff that we did get, like, isn't necessarily all that great. Listening to you guys talk about Star Trek, you know, they all communicate via their comm badges, and we have that now because we've all been either in front of or behind that person at Starbucks who is talking on speakerphone, and now everyone in the coffee shop gets to be part of that conversation. That's not fun.
Sometimes I make it fun. But you're right, that's not fun.
Yeah. And if I was a person who was on the other side of that phone call, I wouldn't necessarily want to be broadcast to everyone at Starbucks anyway. So, yeah. So we kind of have to be careful what we wish for, because the stuff that we get, you know, we may actually get exactly what we were wishing for. You know, the comm badge thing is one thing that I think about with the advent of cell phones. I know I can't just tap the thing on my shirt and get to talk to people, but a Bluetooth headset comes pretty close, and thanks to a cell phone, now when you call me, if you ask if I'm home, you may get an answer that is no. I used to have a friend that would call my landline, like way before cell phones, like in the 80s. I had a friend when we were in school, she would call me and she would always go, "Hi, are you home?" And finally, one day I told her no, and she was like, "Oh, sorry, I'll call later." So she hung up, and then like 30 seconds later she called back and she was like, "Wait."
Well, that was probably code for, you know, are you available to speak, of course, right?
Yeah. But
or are you alone?
Yeah, it was just, "Are you home?" And it always struck me as funny. And you know, every once in a while my mom will ask me that, "Are you home?" And no, I'm at the store, I'm at the ocean, I'm, you know, somewhere else. That's entirely possible now. It didn't used to be. So I think, you know, some of what we've gotten has been really nice. Like, we don't have a landline at my house. And one of the reasons that this is convenient for me is because if my phone rings, you're calling to talk to me. And if my husband's phone rings, you're calling to talk to him. And just that alone and is nice. You know, I'm not saying that it was such a horrible thing when you would pick up the phone and not only not know who was calling you, but not know who they wanted to talk to. You know, it wasn't like that was any great tragedy, but it's just nice that I know if the phone, if my phone is ringing, it's for me. Like, I find that really convenient. So
I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, that's actually really cool. If my phone rings, it's for me.
Mm-hmm.
So now, John, you said you had a little rant.
Well, you know, back to Star Trek, one of the things that we had a vision of the future for is certainly in the Star Trek Next Generation was carrying on a conversation with a computer where the computer apparently, you know, was human in its ability to understand what you were talking about and respond to you. It may have had the emotional maturity of a 10-year-old, but at least you could carry on a decent conversation with it. And that's something we haven't gotten after all these years of research and all the work with Siri and Cortana and all the development and universities and AI research. I still can't sit down and have a conversation with my computer. It can't pass the Turing test, although there was a computer in Great Britain recently that did pass the test for the first time. What troubles me is that being able to have this Star Trek-like conversation with my computer has been 10 years away for the last 50 years. And we never seem to quite get there. We don't have the Jarvis of Tony Stark. We don't have the main computer of the Enterprise. And I don't see why that can't be done. Maybe there's some commercial and economic reasons for the investment that it would take. But it's the breakthrough we've been waiting for. A good modern iMac is certainly capable of a couple hundred gigaflops. As we know, the new Mac Pro, loaded up with FireCore 700s and OpenCL, can do 7 teraflops. 7 teraflops is enough to build an AI agent that can pop up on the screen and say, "Good morning, John. What can I do for you this morning? Let's have a conversation about what you need. Oh, I got that file you were looking for yesterday. I also found that story by, you know, Johnny Evans at Computer World you were looking for, and here's the link." You know, basically knowledge navigator level of human interaction and intelligence. And we don't have it yet. And our Macs are powerful enough. I wish I had it, and I've been ranting about it for years.
You know, that fits in nicely with a piece that I wrote this morning about a company called Viv Labs. And this company was started by the guys that developed Siri. And they left Apple, and they've been working on what they see as the vision that they always had for Siri. And it's pretty much what you're asking for right now, John. Now, they aren't offering a time frame for when Viv, their replacement for Siri, will be available. But they are developing it in such a way that it will not be tied to a single platform. So it's not like if you want to have true interaction like that with your computer or your smartphone, you have to buy an Apple product, and any company will be able to tie into this.
Well, that fits in with what Kelly was talking about with robots, because before we can carry on a conversation with a robot, we have to be able to first carry on a conversation with our Macs as a precursor in the technology. And robots will never get, Kelly, where we want them to be until we can have that human conversation with them. And so it's time to get on with it, isn't it?
I think so. But I also know that it can be really complicated. One of the things that I was thinking about earlier when we were talking about having a conversation with your computer is that Jeff and I are regular guests on different shows over at the British Tech Network. And I know a couple of those guys have no end of grief and heartache with Siri. And it's just accents.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have anything to do with what they're saying. They're not trying to ask Siri to do anything complicated, but they can't get her to understand, "Send a text message to my wife."
Yeah, they can't get her to understand anything. It's not a matter of Siri not being able to do it. It's that she simply,
right,
it simply can't understand what it is that's being said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the parsing software can only do what it can understand.
Right.
In the parsing, but there's no there behind it in terms of intelligence. There's not even a Watson level of comprehension of what,
right,
you're trying to communicate. It's just converting parsed English into, mm-hmm, some sort of action.
Yeah, because it's not fuzzy. You know, you have to say kind of a certain way. You have to make sure you get all the right things in there in order for Siri to be able to understand you. And the problem is, because of certain types of accents, they're not understood.
That's true. And these are the sorts of things that Viv will hopefully overcome. And it will also take this whole interacting with our electronic devices to a new level, because Viv will be able to learn. And so the more we use it, and not just on an individual level, but as a collective, the more we use it, the smarter it will become and the better it will get at anticipating our needs. And what I'm visualizing is a day when I can sit down at my computer, or I pick up my iPhone 12 or whatever, and it says, "Good morning, Jeff. I checked your email, and you've been invited to a special media event on this date. I went ahead and confirmed for you because I know you want to go, and I took the liberty of scheduling your flights and booking your hotel for you. I can change any of these if you need me to."
Knowledge Navigator.
Yeah.
Keeps coming back to haunt us, doesn't it?
Knowledge Navigator is a holy grail for me. Yeah. I really want that bad.
Well, you know, Apple under Spindler was playing around with those technologies. And for a while, Apple had this holy grail project where they were trying to instantiate each of the individual technologies that were demonstrated in Knowledge Navigator. And they went off and they spent a lot of money. And they had some cool demos, but they never developed a shipping product. And when Steve Jobs came back, Steve Jobs said, "Well, you're fooling around. You're playing with toys. They're nice demos, but you haven't created a shipping useful customer product." So he killed that advanced technology group, and that killed Apple's efforts towards implementing Knowledge Navigator. But maybe it's time to resurrect that.
I would love to see Knowledge Navigator really happen.
That'd be awesome.
I would love that.
And Kelly, since you're a Roomba fan, there's a book I want you to read.
Okay.
The Door into Summer by Robert Heinlein. I won't say anything more except that if you like Roombas, you need to read that book. It's a great science fiction novel from Robert Heinlein, The Door into Summer.
Heinlein stuff. So
you will love it.
Okay.
Awesome. All right. Well, now we all have some homework. That's great. Hey, thanks both of you for joining me today.
Thanks.
I loved this conversation, and there are days where I wish the show was much longer because there's so many more things that we could have talked about with this.
Indeed.
So for another day. And thank you again for joining me. You guys rock.
See you later.
Bye-bye.